Accession number 30404, Mr. Ted Clements, rail 2. Okay, so you go to the MT6. Now, what lorries were you driving there? Do you remember the type?
The type, they were Ford. They were Ford lorries.
Three tonners.
And we had the one tonners as well, smaller ones, you know, but mostly three tonners. That's for our transport of three tonners.
What did you think of the Ford lorries, either of them, the one or three tonners? I mean, what do you think of them as lorries?
They were very good. Very good indeed, because they've been very, you know, delicately treated by our chaps back there in the workshops, you know, in South Africa, and they'd really put their heart into getting them up to standard, you know. They built the bodies and everything all on them, you know.
And they were reliable?
They were very reliable. The only trouble was that they were two-wheel drive, which was something that we sort of had problems with when it rained, you see, in these places where there are no roads.
Now, so what happened from, you're at Gilgal, I don't know how long, you were there, you were at Nairobi and Gilgal till when? Gilgal till, when did you leave Gilgal? Approximately.
Sometime, it's still in September.
Yes. So none of this is taking
November.
Much time?
October, November, I was in the desert by that time. So right. Just shows, you see.
So where'd you go to next?
Well, from there, another arrangement was made that the MT companies, who were going to be bringing up ammunition, food, and all that sort of thing, were vitally short of drivers and so on, and people who could manage mechanical things. It's a strange thing, but it was like that. So from there, I hopped from the transport in the NMR, I hopped to a company called the 4th MT company.
Now, who are they?
They were South Africans, all white drivers. South Africans who'd been recruited and been trained in South Africa.
Did it have a parent body, like the Army Service Corps? It would be in England, but was there a bigger unit there that the 4th MT company was part of?
No, I don't think there were. We just had these companies that have accompanied the different regiments and so on, the different battalions and so on. We didn't have anything like that ahead there. Not that I can remember anyway. I don't remember.
Were you attached to a particular? Were you attached to a particular division? We're still with first division.
Yes, we're first division. Yes, right. Second brigade.
So the 4th MT Company, 2nd Brigade. First division would be right.
Yes.
Your notes say 4th, 5th Brigade. Is that just wrong?
No, that's later.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So what happens next, sir? You've transferred. How did you feel about transferring from infantry to MT?
Well, I wasn't so keen on it really, because I left a lot of my friends behind. You know, chaps who were in the infantry with me, chaps who had been at school with me, played rugby with me, I left them all behind. So I wasn't so keen. But the thing is that I had taken this special course, thinking I was going to serve our regiment, but I'd taken a special course, so I was obliged to do what they ordered me to do, because I had the qualification, you see. And they were nice fellows too. They were mostly from Durban too. Mostly from Durban, a nice crowd of people. So I got on well with them as well, and we did a lot of transport night and day.
What was the unit doing? What was your role as a transport company, an MT company?
My role was the driver.
But what I mean is, what were you transporting?
Transporting supplies, food, and ammunition. Ammunition and funnily enough, we carried a lot of petrol. I suppose that was for the forward, because we had armoured cars at that time. We had some armoured cars, I'm sure, yes, and we were carrying petrol as well.
So where would you take it to and from? The B echelon or A echelon? Or where would you pick it up and take it from?
Well, you see...
Or was it from the depots to the B echelon?
Well, by that time, the battalion was moving forward. But in the meantime, the first the brigade was moving forward. But in the meantime, the first brigade, our first brigade, South African, was well up into northern Kenya and Abyssinia, going into Abyssinia. So we were following them now. There's a build-up, you see.
What have I got here? Oh, sorry.
Are you all right?
Yeah. No, fine.
So you were just driving into Abyssinia. Now, what
carrying stuff with us, yes. Here, under terrible conditions. No roads. Two-wheel drive, you know.
I mean, what sort of problems do you have on when there's no roads and only two? Because people are used to four-wheel drive now.
Yeah. Well, we had to get out, and people had to come and help us, and we had the two drivers, you see, so we used to have to help the other trucks in front and push them through the bad places, and then come back and push the others through, and so on, and then continue on from there.
Were you under attack at all? I don't know whether there's anything.
Not
to
at
attack.
That time, no. No attack. In fact, we during that campaign we were not often attacked because we were chasing the Italians mostly, and they weren't coming back and we were after them. They were moving back all the time, so we didn't have anybody coming in from the side or anything attacking our transport or anything like that. We had.
Yes,
there were some planes. The odd plane came over, but absolutely hopeless. These funny Italian planes didn't do any damage.
So what happens next? And you're advancing into Abyssinia?
Yes. Right into Abyssinia. And our 1st Brigade was pushing through and going right up, and they were two or three battles ahead of us. And by the time we got... our units all got into Abyssinia, the 4th MT was pulled out on block, and we had to go way back and to Nairobi, and we caught and went down to Mombasa, chased down to Mombasa.
Now, why was
and
that?
Sent to the Middle East. Well, I suppose they were very short of transport drivers and things in the Middle East, so we were up there, and I felt that what they had enough was sufficient to finish off with the Italians in Abyssinia. They didn't need us anymore.
Now, you just drove back to Mombasa, and then...
No, we drove to Nairobi.
Nairobi.
Well, I'm not quite sure, I think we went by train from Gilgil to Nairobi, and then by train from there to Mombasa. We waited for a ship, and a ship eventually came, troop ship.
Do you remember the name?
No, I don't know the name. And then it took us to Suez.
Is that Port Suez?
Port Suez, yes, Port Suez.
And that would be, what date would this be? Edging into October yet? Or?
Yes, I think we're just coming into October, you know. October, November, yeah. Yes, just coming into October.
Anything about the trip? The voyage, I mean?
Oh, no,
it
was fine. We didn't have a problem at all. The ship was fine. No, I can't remember anything that I thought was distasteful, anything happening, or dangerous, or anything like that. We got to Suez, because Suez was being bombed a lot, you know. We were there for quite a while, and a lot of bombing went on there, but not on the ship. Not on the ship.
So, where next, then?
Yeah. Let me think.
So, what happened next?
Well, we were given transport, and we drove to Mers Matru, from where we were based to carry ammunition and supplies to various places, to various regiments who were spread out in the desert at that time, before they started the campaign, and of course to supply a lot of the Allied troops that had been in the desert for months already.
Now, what were conditions like at Mers Matru? I mean, what were your living conditions? Where were you living? Or did you just have dugouts?
No, we didn't have dugouts because there was no bombing at that stage down there at Mers Matru. The odd plane used to fly over, you know, sort of recce, but that was all. We had makeshift huts there too. Makeshift huts.
Did you make them, or did someone else make them?
No, they'd made them. I think it was the Kenyan people had put them up for us, the army and so on. They erected them for us when we came there. It had been a camp, and other people had gone ahead. before us. You see, the, some of the Allied troops, they use black fellows. These the local blacks were in the army at that time. They've been recruited. And they, you know, as you know, they finished up in Burma, a lot of them too, and they did a wonderful job. These are the East African blacks. They'd gone ahead, and we came up and took over from them in these camps. But from there, we went off, and we had to do all this supply running and that sort of thing.
And now, who are you taking supplies to? Because your unit wasn't there yet, was it? The main unit?
No.
The first South African division wasn't there yet.
Well, the first South African division was there, yes.
It was on its way there.
Oh,
right?
Yes, they were there, up there. They were engrossed with the Italians. They were fighting on the Italians on the whole front.
So you hadn't moved ahead? They hadn't sent the 4th Transport Company ahead?
No.
It was just they moved the whole division?
Yes, sorry.
Now, tell me about the duties driving in the desert then.
We just did routine work, but we used to drive through the night, and there used to be such a hurry on with us that we had to get a move on, and we'd drive through the night and not get much sleep and that sort of thing. But we did it. We were keen to do it, you know, and we did it. And
what was it like driving in the desert? I mean, you were having trouble with mud. Now you're in a desert. How did you find that?
Well, we didn't go in the sandy places, you see. We kept to the coast.
On the coast? There is a coast road.
A coast road. We were on there to a certain extent, but then there was no road after that. Of course, we went inwards. We went inland, and we just travelled on sand. It was like hard sand, you know, with shrubs, little shrubs, that sort of thing. It's just most annoying, because you'd hit these shrubs, and they'd have sand collected around them, so they made big bumps, you know. But anyway, that was just part of the game, but that's where we were. We were often off the main road altogether.
Would you get bogged down a lot with your two-wheel drives?
Not in the desert, no. Not in the desert.
So it was all right for that?
Yes, it was all right.
What about your food and water supply for yourselves? I mean, what were you eating at that point? What food was supplied for you?
Well, bully beef and biscuits, of course. Occasional tin of beans or something like that. But that was the diet.
Now, that's not very appropriate to the desert. I mean, it's very salty.
Yes.
Biscuits are very dry.
That's right.
How did you cope with that, with those rations?
Well, you know, being young and all that sort of thing, one is put up with all that, you know. I mean, they didn't worry about it too much.
What about water supply?
Water supply, well, the water was always short. We were always, minimal amount of water.
Unless
we were at a base camp, and then they'd have water there. But
they'd have it at Mersey,
Yes.
And how would you manage then?
And by the pardon?
When you were on the road, how do you manage your water?
Well, they used to issue us with water from the tankers. They had these tankers on wheels, round tankers full of water, and they used to bring these up, and we could get our water supply from that, like a bottle a day or that sort of thing.
That's not much.
No, not much. No.
A couple of things I noticed is you seem to have had some interesting experience at Mersey. There's a bit about dynamiting fish in the Mediterranean.
Oh, goodness.
Can you tell us about that?
You're interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, just tell us about that.
Oh. Well, we were there, and we had some engineers camped near us looking after the roads and so on, but they used to come off. And we noticed in the Med that there were quite a number of fish around there. There were some rocks near where we were. And there were quite a number of fish coming around, and we saw these, so we had this idea, which was a terrible thing, of course, I know, that dynamiting the fish so we could get some fish, something different to eat, which is what we did. And it was quite a nice change in our diet, you know, and the engineers used to get their share of it as well, but rigged up this business as dynamite with a float and that sort of thing, and letting it float out and blow up, go into the details of the thing, but we were dynamiting the fish, yes, and getting something to eat. But they stopped us doing it after a while.
Why?
The authorities stopped us. Well, I don't know, they suppose they thought it was dangerous or something, they'd get killed, get their arm blown off or something like that, you know, but it didn't happen, but they stopped us. But that was true.
It also says you did a fair bit of shooting there You learned to shoot properly there.
Yes, we.
Was that just for fun, or I mean, you know, or was it proper training?
No, we had proper training in shooting all the time. We were, you know,
even as a transport company.
Yes, yes, yes. Even as a transport company, well, because we were armed, of course. We could have been, you know, taken out of your truck and put in an infantry section at any minute, an emergency. You know, you could have. So we still had our rifles and we used to use them and the training because they had a range nearby there. There was an old building, an old fort there that the Egyptians had built years ago. It was all falling down, but some of the people put roofs over it and they had used it as a store for food and all that sort of thing. But there was a range there still and we used to go and shoot there. Yeah.
Now, there's also a story about cans of South African brandy. Tell us about that, because that's unusual. I mean, it's just very strong drink to issue to troops. That's all. I mean, was it stolen or was it issued?
It was issued to us. Issued to us if they could get it to you. But
in cans,
very very strong. Not in cans. No, they used to bring it up in milk cans, and then dish it out from like when they dish out your food from the cookhouse or wherever it was.
So it was a
if you're in the camp, you see, mostly.
And this was, you'd get this, like the British would get their rum.
Yes, rushing. The same sort of thing. But absolutely.
It says that people got horribly drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and how did that happen?
Yeah, because they mismanaged the whole thing, the store and that sort of thing, and they got drunk and they drank the stuff. Yeah.
And did you drink with them, or?
No.
There's a story about you nearly having a fight with a cook.
Did you get that story?
Yeah, tell us about it. What happened?
Well, we were on fatigue, you see. What was I then? I was still a private. And we used to get, you know, being in a big camp like that, everybody had to take their turn. And we had a kitchen fatigue to do, my little section. And there were about six or seven of us who... you had this kitchen fatigue, and now the cook that we had and his helper, they were nasty people. They were really nasty to people. The younger chaps, you know, used to pick on them and call them all sorts of things and so on. And one day when I was on this fatigue, he really got on my nerves, and I said to him, you know, if you didn't have those stripes on your arm, you know, I'd bash you, sort of thing. So he said, yes, you bash me. I said, yes. He said, well, any time. I'll take the stripes off and you can have a go at me any time. So I said, right, okay, and fix the time. Well, I'd done a bit of boxing in my day, early on, you know, during the rugby years. We used to go to the gym and box as well. And I wasn't frightened of him. But apparently he had been a sort of pugilist sort of assistant to boxers in Johannesburg. But he was getting on. He was about 40 or so, quite old for an army chap, you know. And he'd been a street cleaner at night with hose pipes cleaning the streets of Joburg. So they were just telling you the background of this man. So he said, I'll bash you any time. So I said, all right, what about 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon? Out on the dunes there. Yes, all right, okay, I'll be there. But he used to drink too, you see, quite a lot. And I went back and I told my corporal, and he said, ooh, he said, oh, Chap Smith, he'll murder you, man, you know. I said, I don't care, he'll murder me. I made an arrangement already with him. And we're going to have this fight. So chaps around knew about this and heard about this, and they were all getting ready to see it, you see. No boxing gloves, anything, just... So, when it came to about 4:45 on the afternoon, I was lying in my tent. We had dugouts in these tents in Mithmar, which was like a big established camp. And someone came to the opening in our tent, and Peter Hood said to me, oh, there's old Smithy wants to see you. So I said, oh, Smithy, yeah. You want to start the fight now? No, he wants to see you. So I went out there and Smithy says, yeah, you know, Clements, he said, we better forget about the fight. He says, I'm not too good. And he said, I hear that you're not too bad at using yourself, and I think we better call it off.
Okay. We shook hands and he buzzed off. And when I used to go to the cookhouse after that, I used to get an extra cup of coffee and a couple of things here and there, you know, from Mr. Smith. It just shows you that one stands up for oneself when one can get places. I wasn't scared of him at all. I would have done my best. Mm.
Now, anything else going on at Mercer Matruh during that time?
Not really that I would like to record. It's just a routine, monotonous wait, you know. And so
how long were you there for? You got there in early October.
Yes, and I finished up back there in October, a long time after, too. When I got back from up north. Anyway, we were then sent off to various regiments. We were broken up and sent off to various regiments.
And which?
And I was sent with a friend to the it's a Scottish regiment, 3rd Jocks, 3rd Transvaal Scottish. I was sent to them.
As a driver?
As a driver with a truck and so on.
A Ford?
A Ford, yes. Well, no. By this time we had the British Bedfords, four-wheel drives. No, we had four-wheel drives by that time. No, they were very good too.
Four-wheel drive, that must have helped.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Bedford generally as a truck?
Well, I thought it was fantastic. It really was. We had very little trouble with it. And they went through hell when you think we had to carry overloads, you know, far too much stuff. You know, pile them up with the cans of petrol and all this heavy stuff, ammunition and stuff at times too, right down on the springs, you know. And we used to go, and we had very little trouble with them. They were excellent. They really were.
Now, which brigade or division were the 3rd Transvaal Scottish?
They were in the 5th Brigade.
So that's when you joined 5th Brigade, yeah. And so it's still 1st South African Division?
Yes.
And when do you think you joined them? October, November? Or
I think it was in October. Sometime in October, just towards the end of October.
Still 1940?
Yes.
There's been a lot happening in 4 months.
Well, a lot happened. Tremendous.
Right. So,
I mean, our chaps were being gradually, the Allied forces were being gradually pushed back, you know, but they were fighting their way back, you know, but fighting all the way, as you know.
Are you sure you don't mean 41?
Is it? Wait a minute. Where am I? I'm getting mixed up now.
We think the dates have gone awry here.
We've gone awry here.
Because,
I'm terribly sorry.
Basically, you were at Mercer Matruh in 1941, aren't you?
Yes.
So I will correct the dates in the cataloguing to represent that we don't quite know, and I'll try and see if I can look them up.
Well,
it's a long time ago, and dates are not the most important thing about this, so we won't worry too much about that.
Yeah, thank you.
So
you're 41 now, yeah.
There's basically been a year. You joined up in June 1940. And the Battle of Sidi Rezegh is late November 41.
Yes.
So it's just across that time, you've done the things you said.
Yes.
Now,
East Africa and in Egypt, yes, getting there.
It did all seem to be taken going rather quickly.
That's right. Sorry, man.
So it's all right. Now, have you got the impression we're in Mercer Matruh quite a while then?
Yes, we were, but we used to go away from there and come back, you know, with all the convoys and things that.
And that was while you were still with the 4th MT.
4th MT.
Now, what happened when you transferred to the 3rd Transvaal Scottish Regiment?
I didn't transfer; I just was attached to them.
Yeah. Right. Got it. So you were still.
A lot of us were distributed amongst
your parent unit was still the 4th MT.
Yes.
So what was this unit like? What did you think of the 3rd Transvaal Scottish Regiment?
Well, I thought they were a great crowd of men, good soldiers, very well trained, very keen to do their best. Generally, I got on very well with them, I must say. My section that I had that I was carrying in my truck, corporal was a first-class fellow, and some of the men were first class. They were really good, nice crowd altogether, from the Transvaal.
Now, what was your job with them? Were you driving supplies or were you driving troops? It sounds
like
you were driving troops.
Both. We did supplies, and when we drop them off, we go for supplies. We carry them in, drop them off wherever they had to go, various places, and also went for supplies and ammunition too, and petrol, because we had to have petrol. We couldn't keep going without it, you know. I mean, so that's the general transport business altogether, right in there. But then,
were you still what rank were you at this point? Had you been promoted? What were you at the Battle of Sidi Rezaeg? Were you a corporal then, or?
No, I don't. What was I? No. I was still a private.
Still a private. Okay. So what happens next then? What's the next thing you remember? I know it's quite complicated piecing it together, so we understand that.
Yeah, of course you do, Peter. You're very kind. You know, we were moving forward as a brigade. Where we were going, heaven alone knows, but I know we were going forward, and we weren't going to the left into the sand areas, but we went to the Sidi Rezaeg aerodrome, which was called the area of the Sidi Rezaeg aerodrome.
Now, this was in November 1941.
Yes.
Now, had you been with them long then?
I'd been with them not long at all. I'd been with them about 2-3 weeks, that's all.
So it was quite. You'd only just joined them in effect,
yes,
the Transvaal Scottish.
Yes.
Now, what was the situation when you got to Sidi Rezaeg Airfield? What was happening there?
Well, there was fighting, you know, noise going on, tank battles and so on happening away from us where we were, where we'd come in. Actually, we came in with three battalions, and the, you know, the third, we had the liaison stuff at the back. We were worried because there was a lot of firing going on, and we knew that sooner or later we were going to get involved, which is what happened.
Now, was this your first real experience of fighting? For you?
Yes.
So this is the first time you've been into action properly.
Been into action, but when you talk about action, you know what I was doing. I was allocated because we dropped the troops off, and there we had a free vehicle going, so we were given this commission to pick up wounded.
Now,
because our regiment, Transvaal Scottish and the other two battalions had got themselves involved in the actual action.
Now your
job moved up forward.
Your job was to pick up the wounded from the battlefield.
Yes.
So did you have anyone to help you with that? Was it you and your, did you have a co-driver?
Two of us, yes. No, there were the two of us, and we had a black driver.
So you weren't driving?
No, we only drove when it was necessary, you know, and so on. He was driving, and we'd take over sometimes and drive and so on.
Now, what do you remember about, it's November the 23rd, 24th, the two most important. What was the situation as you saw it, what around you, or not particularly what you read about the battle, because what you remember of that, those days?
Well, I just remember that we didn't seem to have any direction, and we couldn't find out what we were going to be ordered to do, and we knew that there were tank battles going on around us, and we'd been, we had the field ambulance there, you see, this is the thing, that the firing was going on and the war was happening, action was happening around us, even though it was a field ambulance, where people had an operating theatre, and chaps were being operated on there and being brought in by us and by others, and, firing going on, we went, you know, tanks going past us, and things like that, and some of the Royal Horse Artillery moved up near us, and it was obvious that we were going to try and fight off an attack by Panzer divisions, which is what happened, of course. And there was a battle going up in front, and they came back, they were pushed back